Arms and Security Project at the Center for International Policy. We'll link to your article in the New York Times headlined, Obama Shouldn't Trade Cluster Bombs for Saudi Arabia's Friendship. And that does it for our broadcast. Again, we're on our 100-city tour across the country celebrating 20 years of Democracy Now! I'll be speaking tonight at the Boulder Theater and Friday at Colorado College in Colorado Springs. Then Saturday, it's on to Eagle, Carbondale, and Paonia in Colorado, and Salida on Sunday. Then Taos, New Mexico on Sunday as well. Albuquerque on Monday, Santa Fe on Tuesday. On Wednesday, I'll be in Flagstaff. On Thursday, in Phoenix and Tucson. Then on to Fresno, California, and Friday. Congratulations to Democracy Now! Producer Laura Gottesdiener, who ran the Boston Marathon Monday in 3 hours, 19 minutes, and 45 seconds. Go, girl. Thank you so much to Democracy Now!'s Mike Burke, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Gusder, Amy Littlefield, Sam Malkoff, Robbie Caron, Dennis Moynihan. I'm Amy Goodman in Denver with Nermeen Sheikh in New York. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. Stay tuned for evening news coming up next.
Join us this Friday on Bread and Roses. Host Nia Nguyen will focus on the way food and culture is affected by imperialism and colonialism. Chef extraordinaire, writer, and host of soon-to-premiere podcast, Race a Sandwich, Soleil Ho, join us for this evocative and tantalizing discussion about how food and culture are shaped by race, class, and gender. Again, this is Bread and Roses, this Friday, April 22nd at 6 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland. This is a membership drive special, so show your love for community radio and for feminist programming by donating.
KBOO would like to thank our community partners that donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Paradise Bakery, located at 700 Southwest 5th Avenue, a bakery cafe serving pastries, soups, salads, and sandwiches, all made fresh daily. Lunch was provided by Pizza A Go-Go, located at 3240 North Williams, serving handcrafted pizzas in-house, takeout, or delivery from fresh prepared ingredients and local organic produce since 2002. Dinner was provided by Zian Hong, located at 5314 Northeast Sandy Boulevard, serving traditional Chinese fare.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the League of Women Voters of Portland, presenting a City of Portland Council candidate forum and City of Portland gas tax ballot measure on Monday, April 25th at 6 p.m. at the Multnomah County Building Boardroom, 501 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard. More information at lwvpdx.org. This program has also been made in part by the Earth and Spirit Council, presenting an Earth Day All Species celebration Sunday, April 24th at Mount Tabor Park from noon to 6. Attendees are invited to come dressed as their favorite species or Earth feature. The event includes live music by Quincy Davis and friends, mask making, and more. Information is available at Earth and Spirit Council's Facebook page.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, residents of the Dalles are struggling with air pollution hotspots from a railroad tie manufacturing plant.
Don't shoot Portland activist Teresa Rayford's trial on third-degree disorderly conduct charges continue.
And the Overlook Neighborhood Association joins a lawsuit against the City of Portland to force better policies for houseless people.
Good evening. This is KBOO Evening News for Thursday, April 21st. I'm Jamie Haddad.
And I'm Robert Barncord. Closing arguments were heard in Teresa Rayford's disorderly conduct trial in downtown Portland just this morning. Rayford was apparently arrested for blocking traffic at a Black Lives Matter celebration on August 9th, last year, 2015. KABU's Joe Meyer is covering the trial and filed this report.
So what does the lawsuit, what is it trying to address?
Well, we believe that
Teresa Rayford's disorderly conduct case started with pretrial hearings on Monday and finished with closing arguments this morning. Here are the jury instructions from Circuit Court Judge Michael Greenlee.
Oregon law provides that a person commits the crime of disorderly conduct in the second degree if the person intentionally creates public inconvenience or annoyance by intentionally obstructing vehicular traffic on a public way. In this case, to establish the crime of disorderly conduct in the second degree, the state must prove beyond a reasonable doubt the following elements. One, that the act occurred on August 9th, 2015. And two, that Teresa Rayford intentionally created public inconvenience or annoyance by intentionally obstructing vehicular traffic on a public way.
Here's a clip from Prosecutor McMahon's closing statement.
The video you've seen, Evidence 101, Defense Exhibit 101, has played a critical role in this trial. And I'd ask that you watch and carefully consider that video. Because that video gives extremely strong evidence both to Ms. Rayford's actions and to her intent. Early in the video, at approximately 1 minute and 36 seconds, you will see her in that video pointing, directing, saying we need coverage over here. Coverage to make sure that that intersection was blocked in all four directions on that busy Sunday afternoon. That first shows her intent to block traffic. Now you heard Ms. Rayford's own testimony, how she simply said, well, I was just a safety patrol person, making sure people were safe. But it's a question that Mr. Lowe asked during his cross-examination. It's one I want you to consider carefully. Why would you need a safety coordinator were it not for the fact that you were standing in the middle of a busy intersection?
Mr. McHenry, for the defense, points out that Ms. Rayford was not doing anything different than many other protesters and that she was arrested for being a leader of Black Lives Matter.
Was she arrested because she committed disorderly conduct? No, she wasn't. Was she arrested because there was probable cause of her committing that offense? No. She wasn't. She was arrested because she's Teresa Rayford. She was arrested because she's a vocal member of Black Lives Matter. She's arrested because she's loud. She's arrested because she makes law enforcement uncomfortable. She's arrested for speaking her mind and encouraging others to do the same. She's arrested for standing in the face of oppression and saying, this is not okay. There were other people in the street that day. 100, at least 100, at least 75 to 100, I guess, is what came in. There are other people chanting. There are other people in the intersection. There are other people in the crosswalks for that 4.5 minutes or maybe up to 10, depending on the testimony. And then I think the video has it about 7.5 minutes. People are in there. There are adults. There are young people. There are kids. There are teenagers. There are elderly. People celebrating Michael Brown's life. All these people doing exactly the same thing that Ms. Rayford was doing that day. But only Ms. Rayford gets arrested for it. Only Ms. Rayford gets arrested for it. She's not arrested when traffic has actually stopped. She's not arrested then. The state keeps talking about, oh, look at the bus being stopped. Look at all the people that were held up. Look at the bus, look at the bus, look at the bus. But she's not arrested then. She's arrested when traffic is flowing freely around her, after everybody's already moved out of the intersection, when the protest is coming to an end. When the protest is coming to an end, Sergeant Clark, the officer in charge, issues a command from the other side of the street to arrest the woman in the black bandana and the black shirt.
That was Teresa Rayford's defense attorney, Mr. McHenry, arguing that his client was singled out and arrested because of her activism. The jury just took a few hours to decide. Here's Judge Greenlick with the call.
Okay. Omitting the caption of the case, the verdict form reads, we, the jury duly impaneled and sworn in the event of entitled cause, do find our verdict upon the count submitted to us as follows. Count one, disorderly conduct in the second degree. Verdict is not guilty.
Yes.
So, Ms. Carson, was this a unanimous verdict?
It was.
In other words, did every single juror agree that the verdict should be not guilty?
Yes.
That was Teresa Rayford's jury of peers. Ms. Rayford remains not guilty. And this is Joe Meyer with KBOO News.
Police were absent from Wednesday's Citizen Review Committee appeal meeting for a man who claims to have been abused by law enforcement officers. In response, all seven members of the CRC, which is a volunteer offshoot of the Independent Police Review, voted to legally require members of the police bureau to attend the next meeting. In a letter to CRC Chair Kristen Malone, Acting Police Chief Donna Henderson said officers would not be attending the meeting because they remained concerned about encountering a, quote, corrosive and intimidating environment. She justified officer absence by citing a rule from the City of Portland Human Resources Administrative Department. The concerns stem from an incident at the March 30th CRC meeting when an activist threw a cup of water at two CRC members who sympathized with police. In response, the committee introduced new rules in an effort to maintain greater discipline and order. Security guards the power to eject disruptive people and separate audience seating, and assumed this would appease the police bureau. But they anticipated incorrectly. Independent Police Review Director Constantine Saveri noted the CRC vote was unprecedented.
KBOO's many news volunteers have stepped up their game to bring you this locally produced newscast every single weekday evening. Joining us now are Jenna and Yinka to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, and it's in the middle of right now of our spring membership drive. You're listening. We just really quick want to thank Richard from Portland, and he just became a member. Yay, Richard.
Yay.
So you can join Richard by calling 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266. Become a member today if you can. Say spare $5 a month or just $10 a month and help support the evening news that you're listening to right now that you love, that brings you our local news.
You know, you hear the noise in the background. That's our volunteers right here in the station. You can come on down and see what we do here at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. You can meet Lisa, the new news director, and myself, Jenka. I am the web and new media coordinator. I can walk you through the new website and show you all the great features that we have. We can show you around the studios. You can see how this community radio is made. Address here is 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. So if you're out and about and you want to stop by, bring the kids. We've got, we've got some toys out front. You can hang out. You can meet my daughter. And it's a family operation here. 877-500-KBOO if you can't come by. But if you can, 20 Southeast 8th. Take a little time and give your, $5 a month contribution. Maybe your $20 a month contribution. Give a little bit each month, and it helps the community every time it comes out of your bank account or your credit card. It's very secure, very convenient, and if you could budget us in, maybe give up maybe you have a thing for lattes and you pay $5 for your latte. Give up one of those a month, just one a month, and you can contribute to community and make sure that these voices of resistance, voices of oppressed people, voices of our community stay on the airwaves. Please give us a call right now. I do want to say we did make our match for the last hour. So thank you to everyone who gave. And we want to keep that momentum going. We are about a fifth of the way to our $120,000 goal. And as soon as we reach that goal, we're done. So we're just going to keep going. And we hope that you will be the person to help us reach it. If you could give $10 a month, maybe you could give $1,000. Maybe you could give $10,000, Whatever you can give, it all comes together. It's a community effort. 877-500-5266. Let's make those phones ring back here. And we're going to go back to the evening news. I see they're standing by, ready to bring you some more of this compelling newscast produced by local volunteers. So do keep those phones ringing, 877-500-KBOO.
As fights over air pollution spring up across the state, Oregon environmental regulators today announced a new program against industrial toxics. Governor Kate Brown has directed the Oregon Health Authority and Department of Environmental Quality to launch Cleaner Air Oregon to, quote, overhaul the state's industrial air toxics regulatory standards. Officials say the new program specifically uses public health as a barometer for regulating industrial air toxic regulations to incorporate health-based standards. DEQ and OHA say they are seeking broad-based public input into the Cleaner Air Oregon regulatory reforms. Oregonians can begin sharing comments and following the process at a new website, www.cleanereroregon.gov.
Now, Portland's air quality issues have been under scrutiny for several months, but another city in Oregon faces a different air quality struggle, one dealing with naphthalene and creosote. That's naphthalene. Rachel Najjar's family moved to the Dalles in June. They began to feel the firsthand side effects of naphthalene poisoning. KBOO's Lisa Loving spoke with Rachel, who is a mom of four and is now fighting for clean air in the Dalles.
I was smelling something in the air, but I just attribute it to, you know, it just smelled like work, like something industrial was going on. I didn't think much of it. It was quite an inconvenience. It's a really horrible smell. It smells like mothballs. The longer I was here, the more I was noticing it, and it comes and goes, but it's really frequent, like almost every day. And then in July, my girls started getting really sick just a couple times. I think it was like two or three times for each, my 2 and 3 year old. They were getting they would just like chug a gallon of water, and then they would start vomiting profusely. And then they would just walk to their bed and go to sleep. And I knew it was different than any other illness they've had, because they've never walked to their bed and gone to sleep. Even my little one was hospitalized, and it was still hard to get her to go to sleep. They just don't like to sleep. So I knew something was different. And then they would wake up okay. So I just thought, okay, well, this seems like something that's environmental. And so I asked around, and then I found another mom. Her two daughters had the same symptoms, and they were hospitalized 3 times this summer, and she lives closer to the plant than I do, so unfortunately it's worse for her. And then I had another friend who's from Asia, Indonesia, and her daughters have the same thing every summer, same symptoms. But no other families that I talked to had the same symptoms. So then the mom whose husband is from Africa, I don't think I mentioned that, the first friend whose kids were hospitalized, she and I started putting it together that we were looking online at scholarly articles, and we found that Ameritize, which is a wood treatment facility on the waterfront in downtown the Dalles, they spray railroad ties with a chemical called creosote, and naphthalene is what causes the odor in the creosote, which is really the most dangerous component to creosote. And we found that over 50% of children of African, Asian, or Middle Eastern descent have a gene mutation called M6PD, and they lack an enzyme to fight off the naphthalene. So it's just like debilitating to them if they inhale it. And in the summers, that's when it was happening, because they increased production, and my girls were outside because it was hot, so the smell was just really heavy, and they were outside more. And so it's caused us to not be able to open our windows frequently. My girls don't stay outside all the time in fear of them getting sick. And right now my little one's sick, and it's a little different. She's just been vomiting. And so I'm not sure if it's that or something else, but it's kind of strange that it's only one of them. But I've been waiting to get it tested correctly. But naphthalene is a gas, so I guess it's kind of hard to test. I'm trying to find the right test, but it's taking me a long time, and I didn't really want to wait, so I took the story to KGW, and they've helped made my voice be heard, and we're just finding out more and more about the problem and why it's been going on for 94 years, and no citizens have been heard. here, and it's also a small town, and so a lot of the town is almost supporting the plant because we need the 44 jobs. It's not our purpose to take people's jobs. You know, we kind of got to come around and recognize that everybody deserves the right to clean air. Trying to talk to everybody I can. It's a sensitive subject, and I realize that, so I try to be gentle, you know, approach the topic gently and cautiously. But sorry, I've asked a lot of people, and some local people just start putting things together. Like one of my friends, she just sat there one day and told me 20 people she knew that died of cancer, probably 10 that have recovered from cancer, and, you know, they're in remission. Almost everybody I meet has had cancer, or somebody in their family has passed away. The schools have a lot of asthma, high asthma rates, it seems. And, you know, I've met 3 people since I've moved here that have had babies between 20 and 25 weeks, which is pretty alarming to me. I've only met one other person in my entire life that has had that. So to have 3 in one town, that's terrifying to me. We're trying to plan a protest right now for Friday. I think we're going to try for next Friday, which is, I think, the 29th. The best thing that you can do, anybody that's listening, we would love for you to join our Facebook page, which is the Dalles Air Coalition. We're going to have updates on there. We want people to ask questions. We want people to support us. We want every question answered. And the biggest question right now is, why does DEQ have no control?
That was Rachel Najjar, a mother of 4 in the Dalles, speaking with KBOO's Lisa Loving about naphthalene and creosote poisoning and its effects on that Oregon town.
A deadly explosion took the lives of at least 13 oil workers at a petrochemical plant operated by Mexican state-owned oil giant Petróleos Mexicanos, also known as Pemex. The explosion sent an additional 136 people to the hospital, while burning chemical mixtures released a large toxic cloud over the residential area nearby. Hundreds of residents were soon forced to evacuate their homes out of fear of inhaling the potentially toxic air. Pemex has been struggling to keep up under pressure of low crude prices, which some say could be linked to a notable uptick in public safety disasters with Pemex. In February this year, a worker was killed at the same plant in a fire, and in 2015, a fire broke out at another plant, causing nearly $800 million in damages. Other accidents occurred in 2013 and 2012, both causing deaths in the double digits.
You're listening to a membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our volunteers work hard every day to bring you this coverage of local, national, and international news. With us now are Jenna and Janka to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
We urge you to support community radio right now during the evening news. And thank you to everyone who gave during Democracy Now! And helped us reach our goal for that show. We now have a goal for the evening news, and we want to reach that as well. And we want to have just a few of you give $5 a month. If we could have, I think if we have 4 of you give $5 a month right now, then we can reach our goal. The number to call is 877-500-5266. And I found out we have 2 additional copies of the book about Henry Kissinger that was talked about this morning. If you heard that or if you missed it, it is a new account of America's most controversial diplomat. And Greg Grandin was on this morning, and that was absolutely compelling. This book really tears apart both the Nixon administration all the way through to the present, with a take on Henry Kissinger. So pick that up for yourself or for a loved one for $5 a month contribution. We've got just 2 copies of that book. You give yours, your contribution to KBOO, you get a copy of the book, and everyone is satisfied with that, and our community is the better for it. 877-500-5266. Call right now.
Or you can give online at kboo.fm. That's kboo.fm. We have lots of different ways you can give. You can even come down on here and see the news happening right now live here in the studio. And, you know, I am a volunteer in the newsroom, and I watch the whole news come together today, and it's just amazing. We hear so much of in-depth local reporting here on the evening news. We started off with that coverage of the Teresa Raiford trial, and where else are you going to hear that kind of footage and that coverage of activists here in Portland that are important, that are making sure that all those marginalized voices are being heard, and we amplify that here on the evening news. And you can become part of the news by supporting us. Give us a call today at 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266. And the news may be produced by volunteers. It is a volunteer-produced newscast. All those people you hear right now, even the two anchors that are in there, are volunteers, and we need your support. We may do it for free, but hey, it costs a little bit of money to keep the lights on and all the different expenses that we have here at KBOO. And what we love is that we are supported by you. We are supported by the members. In the newsroom, when we're writing the stories, we're thinking about you. How do we represent you? We even have doggies here that seem to love the evening news. That's what we love about KBOO. It's a community. You can come in here, you'll see people bringing in their families, because it is important here at KBOO for us to show the diversity of the Portland community. So give online at kboo.fm or call 877-500-5266.
You know, the stories that you hear on the news, they really hit home. We went from Democracy Now! Talking about the Flint water poisoning by the officials. And then we're hearing about air pollution in the Dalles and these communities and these families getting impacted while the state officials are just sitting on their hands doing nothing about it. And they are organizing. And we're giving you the tools to be a part of that organizing. This is solidarity on the radio. This is community organizing. And this is the way that we find out what our friends and neighbors are going through and what we can do to help. This is a community effort. There's no other station that really is like that anywhere on the airwaves. I guarantee it. I urge you to go around, turn through the dial, and see if you can find a station like KBOO that's organizing in the community and that's talking about these essential issues both locally and across the world, and making those connections. 877-500-5266. Get a copy of this Henry Kissinger, the Shadow Book, The Long Reach of America's Most Controversial Statesman, and get a gift membership for somebody maybe who doesn't know about this stuff, and hand them this book so they can get informed. 877-500-5266. It's just $5 a month. Please do that now.
Become an active member in your listening. If you love the evening news, you love hearing your locally supported, locally produced evening news, show that today. Show your support by calling in right now. Become a sustaining member. Hey, if you only get $5 a month, that's only $5 a month. That's $60 a year. Or maybe you can give a little bit more, $10 a month. That's $120 a year. And I definitely think that my monthly contribution, I am a member to KBOO, is worth just hearing the evening news. I love it so much. And you can do that by going online, kboo.fm, or calling in at 877-500-5266. Help us make our pledge drive goal for this hour for the evening news. We need those phones to get ringing, so help us out, 877-500-5266.
And it's not even about helping us out here at the stations. You're helping yourself. You're helping yourself. This is a university of the airwaves. This is your tuition. This is how you are supporting yourself and your intellectual expansion and your community and the information that gets out to not just yourself but to everybody in your community. You're sharing this resource. You're able to be a part of it if you call right now, 877-500-5266. We want to thank Rebecca from Northeast Portland, who likes Life During Wartime, one of our great punk shows that's on late night, and KW from Northwest Portland. We want you to be the next person we thank. Take a moment right now. Pull over. If you're on your bike, just be safe and take off your headphones and pick up your phone and call right now. 877-500-5266. Take the 2 minutes that it takes to make that call and pledge to give $5, $10 a month to KBOO, whatever you can do. 877-500-KBOO.
The Oregonian newspaper has been catching flack from labor groups for its editorial on April 1st in favor of a right-to-work ballot measure proposed by Portland attorney Jill Gibson. The measure was nearly pulled last year in anticipation of a U.S. Supreme Court ruling in favor of right-to-work. However, since the death of stalwart right-wing Justice Antonin Scalia, the court has been deadlocked on the issue, opening the field for state measures and bills on the issue of right-to-work. The editorial prompted labor groups and
activists to demonstrate in front of the Oregonian's offices in southwest Portland yesterday. KABU reporter Robin Ryan was on the scene and spoke with Michael Brassel of the group Labor for Bernie.
What we've had today is a protest against the April 1st editorial endorsing right to work in our state. Basically, what we have is a Cascade Policy Institute's collaborating with a group called the Freedom Foundation, which is taking outside money, and they're coming into our state. And basically, what we have is a situation where the Cascade Policy Institute and out-of-state money like the Koch brothers have already tried to pass paycheck deception schemes in our state a couple times, and they were rejected by the voters. And what they need to understand is that no means no when it comes to these attacks on working families in our state. And so we're putting pressure on the Oregonian, because the last thing that we want to see is attacks on living wages being carried out by Republican candidates across our state, okay, that are funded by out-of-state groups that are collaborating through the Cascade Policy Institute's blog and privately saying they endorse right to work and publicly not saying a word about it. And so that's a situation that we have, is Alan Alley and a couple of House representatives are on the Cascade Policy Institute's organizing blog saying that they support right to work, and yet
I think they are still the state's most widely read daily here.
Yes.
With that kind of influence, how do they responsibly send that message?
Well, you know, I don't think it is responsible. I think it is a dereliction of their responsibility, and it is biased journalism at its heart. When you've got a newspaper coming out in support of attacks on workers in their state, I think that really doesn't represent the interests of Oregonians, of working people. Union workers on average make somewhere between 25 and 28% more in terms of family wages that they can bring home to their community. And so when we look at our state's newspaper supporting right to work, what they're in effect supporting is keeping that money in the bank accounts of the 0.01% and not flowing in our economy where it can actually help Oregon, where it can help working families feed their kids and pay for basic services and revitalize our state. And so we've got basically monopoly media interests like the Oregonian coming out in support of policies which really undermine our ability to function as a state. It's a really difficult situation, and we want to see that stopped before it gets started.
Now, I'm pretty sure the folks at the Oregonian had a good feeling you guys would be out here today. Have they made any level of effort to communicate with you and explain their position?
So an ad man from the Oregonian came down, and he said his wife's a union nurse and that he opposes right to work. We had some folks take some pictures of us, a handful of people over here pointing, but other than the ad guy coming down and talking to me, I mean, we didn't really have a formal interview. That's okay, though. We were really here just to send the message that Oregon workers are united in their opposition to attacks on working families. No means no, right to work.
The venue thinks it might just kind of change the mind of the community?
They went to the governor and the state legislature under Kitzhaber, and Kitzhaber negotiated a deal that included cuts to teachers' pensions, okay, in order to stay off a right to work ballot initiative. And now what we have is a series of Republican political candidates not being honest about their position on this. They're not being open about their position on this. They're saying, okay, well, we support jobs, we support rebuilding our schools, and yet they're not talking about the fact that they are supporting privately this right to work initiative. And the last thing we want is a sleeper candidate like Scott Walker getting in and pretending to be a moderate Republican, pretending to be concerned about the community, while they're privately telling business interests something else.
Now, has right to work been in play within other states in a way long-standing enough to measure its impact? And if so, what do you know of that impact?
So typically what right to work does is it lowers the wages. And then what you have is situations where more low-wage jobs are created. So governors like Scott Walker say, well, I'm creating jobs, and yet the Wisconsin standing in the overall economy has slipped to one of the lowest in the nation. They go from being a production state with a strong economy leading the nation in production and wages to being at the bottom of the rung for our country, economically speaking, and it's getting worse.
So worst case scenario, the Oregonian pens another editorial in support of lowering the wage floor. You guys have a response plan?
We'll be back. If the Oregonian continues to support attacks on working families will continue to oppose those attacks.
And you are?
My name's Michael Brassell. I'm with Labor for Bernie.
Also here in Portland, a coalition of business owners, local residents, and neighborhood associations filed a lawsuit yesterday against the city of Portland and against Mayor Charlie Hales. The coalition hopes that the lawsuit will force the city to address the houseless crisis beyond just allowing people to camp on the sidewalk. Instead, the coalition would like to see a more permanent and legal solution that actively addresses the needs of the houseless community. KABU reporter Jenna Yokoyama spoke with Chris Trable, board member of the Overlook Neighborhood Association, about their lawsuit.
So what does the lawsuit, what is it trying to address?
Well, we believe that Portland needs to do better than say to our homeless community that all we have for you is sidewalks and some public right-of-way. Go set up a tent, and that's all we have. We believe that the city needs to develop a much more comprehensive strategy and plan by engaging all stakeholders. So this lawsuit primarily is the hope to convince the mayor's office and the rest of the city council to start that conversation that brings all the stakeholders to the table. On a practical level, it seeks to have the homeless camping policy declared illegal. We'd like an injunction against its enforcement. And I'm not the lawyer on this. There's a few arguments that our lawyer is putting forward about why we believe it's an illegal act on the part of the city.
Do you guys consider it an illegal act because of the lack of city council input?
That's one of the arguments that our attorney is putting forward, that the emergency declaration made last year on housing did not envision this, that the mayor cannot act unilaterally in a way to create policy that does not involve council decisions. There's also a provision in state code regarding camping in cities that we think this runs afoul of, and there might be another argument or two in the full legal filing.
So what would you say to people who are worried that this is actually anti-homeless?
I would tell them they shouldn't be worried about that. In fact, we are very much, like, I don't want to say we're pro-homeless. We are anti-homelessness in the sense that we don't think anybody should have to live on the streets without a home. Our view is that the anti-homelessness that's going on right now is taking place at the city because all we're doing is just saying, go out and camp on the streets. We're not providing a comprehensive approach that gets the services to people that need them, people that need help, that gets resources to them to help them transition into having a regular home, something more than a tent that they have to take down every morning.
So what is it that business owners are, what have they said to you guys that has inspired you to do this? What is their main concern? Is it about what it's doing to the neighborhoods, or is it solely just about these individuals being houseless?
I don't think I'd even frame the question that way, I guess. It wasn't that the business owners approached Overlook Neighborhood and said, hey, we're going to convince you to come on to this lawsuit because we, as business owners, have a bunch of concerns about homelessness and the way the city's not dealing with the issue properly. Here in Overlook, we've been on, I guess, the front line of this issue for going on a year now with the Hazelnut Grove Camp in Overlook. We've been, for that year, trying to get the city to engage with us, talk to us about how we can help these people that are down in the camp to find a place that is safer and has the resources that they need, rather than a place that has no fresh water, is a lake in the winter, and prone to fire in the summer, and is right now overrun with rats, doesn't have access to fresh water, and doesn't have regular garbage pickup. These are all things that we've been working on, and so when we heard that the lawsuit was going on, it was something that, given the city's lack of willingness to engage with us, we were like, well, we don't want to have to do a lawsuit. We would rather work with the city, but we also don't want to close off that avenue. So it was something we were willing to sign on to as a neighborhood association.
So anyone who is interested about your lawsuit, is there a place that they can go to learn more about what you guys are advocating for?
Yes, we'll have today or tomorrow more information posted at overlookneighborhood.org. It's the website for the Overlook Neighborhood Association. There's also some information that's been posted to our Facebook group, Overlook PDX.
I've been speaking with Chris Trable. He's a board member of the Overlook Neighborhood Association. Thank you very much for speaking with us today, Chris.
You're welcome. Thank you for your interest.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is followed by Rose City Native Radio at 6. At 7, it's Ear to the Streets of Portland, featuring conversations around organizing in the Black and African communities in Portland and the surrounding areas. Tomorrow's weather will be much cooler than today, with a high of 63 and a low of 48, with showers likely in the morning and possibly thunderstorms at night. Today in history, in 1863, the Persian holy man Baha'u'llah declared his mission as a messenger of God to a handful of his followers in a garden near Baghdad, effectively establishing the Baha'i faith. And in 1989, 100,000 Chinese students marched on Tiananmen Square in Beijing during the funeral of former General Secretary of the Communist Party, Hu Yaobang, who was popular with progressives. It was the largest gathering yet during the 6 weeks of massive protests that culminated in the Tiananmen Square massacre on June 4th. The quote of the day is from Prince, "Eventually, you may have gone down so many paths and learned so much that you don't have to come back again."
Well, now is your chance, all of you listeners out there, to show support for the work that our volunteers put in to bring you this newscast, rain or shine, every weekday throughout the year. Here with us are Jenna and Chanka to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
And we are urging your support right now during our membership drive. If you're not familiar with membership drives, this is the time when we, as a non-commercial radio station, come to you a few times a year asking for your support. We're not supported by commercials. That's why you hear straight through, start to finish, our newscast every day of the year. We do come to you occasionally, every once in a while, and ask for your support during these fundraising drives. And this is how this station is funded. The vast, vast majority of our funding comes from you, the listeners, in our local area, maybe listening online at kboo.fm, or listening on the radio and calling 877-500-5266. We get no government money here at KBOO. We get money just from our local community, and that's how this station is funded. The radio world is dominated by right-wing talk radio, and even in liberal areas, supposedly, like Portland, progressive commercial stations have died out and then been replaced by right-wing stations. We've got media consolidation leaving the entire landscape of this media in the hands of just a few corporations. Here, this is an alternative here at KBOO Community Radio. We're asking for your support, and here in Portland, it's supposedly a progressive town, but five companies own the majority of the media. That's what makes KBOO so important. You get everything that that you get from the professional talk radio stations. You get listener participation, you get up-to-date reporting on the issues that affect your community, deep analysis of current events, and you get it produced by volunteers, and you can get involved. Here, you get it without the 20 minutes, an hour of commercials as well. So please support your station. This is how you do it. You give $5 a month and get a KBOO t-shirt or a Yes Magazine subscription. You get $10 a month, gets you a flash drive filled with exclusive KBOO content. Or if you could give more, if you could give $20 a month, you get a KBOO hoodie. There are many thank you gifts at every level. Please call now and decide what level is best for you. The important thing is that you call. The person who answers will talk you through it. 877-500 KBOO.
Or you can give online at kboo.fm. There's many ways to give. And once again, that's 877-500-5266. Call, show your support for the evening news and how important it is to you. And now we'll go back to that news.
The state flag display in the U.S. Capitol building, including Mississippi's controversial Confederate stamped flag, has been permanently taken down. After they were initially removed for renovations, Representative Candace Miller, a Republican from Michigan and chair of the House Administration Committee, decided to replace the flags with prints of state commemorative coins. This decision joins a series of national discussions on the ethics and legality of the Confederate flag, inspired Confederate-inspired state flags. Defenders of Confederate flags use heritage to justify what others consider deeply divisive and racist. Representative Benny Thompson, a Democrat from Mississippi, said in response to the flag removal, quote, "I am pleased that the architect of the Capitol will no longer display symbols of hatred and bigotry."
Students entering the job market after graduation this year continue to face elevated unemployment rates and stagnant wages. This is despite contentions that the overall economic picture is said to be improving. That is according to an annual report issued today by the Economic Policy Institute. Cable reporter Robin Ryan discussed the challenging realities that persist for new workers in the now lengthy wake of what's been called the Great Recession.
I'm talking with Teresa Kroger. She is a research assistant and one of the authors of the Class of 2016 report issued by the Economic Policy Institute this morning. Is this an annual report?
Yes, this is an annual report that we do every year. You can find past versions titled similarly, the Class of 2015 and 2014. And it's interesting to see the data compared over the years.
In general, it seems that though there are some nominal improvements, opportunity in the United States is expected to remain a challenge to those entering the job market after graduation season. How many people is that nationally?
I don't know the number nationally, but we know that it is a large portion of young high school and college graduates that are having difficulty finding jobs out of school. And we even in the report look at the proportion of those that are not enrolled or not employed, those who are idled after graduation, and it's stark numbers.
Among the key findings of this report, there's a data bit suggesting nearly two-thirds of those in their latter 20s don't have or won't be pursuing college degrees. Given the avid promotion of higher education as key to a better monetarily managed life, I'm wondering how this particular measurement weighs against years past. Is that ratio drastically up or down?
The share of young high school and college graduates that enroll in further education has decreased and stagnated in recent years. It used to be a lot higher after the recession. A lot of students would shelter in school to ride out the weak economy, and those numbers just aren't as high as they used to be.
While the report issued today appears to be something of a commencement season annual, the data seems